Humble laborers. There are some in Stockholm who in humble circumstances are seeking earnestly to spread the knowledge of the truth. One of these is Brother Norlin, who labors as a colporter. Shouldering his pack, stocked with our books and papers, he goes on foot from place to place, often traveling many miles a day. His profits have been very small, especially on those of our Swedish books that are published in America, where the cost of production is greater than in Europe, and the expense of transportation in Norway and then to Sweden must be added to the first cost. When the whole expense is taken from the low prices at which books are sold in these countries, very little margin is left for the colporter. On one of the large bound books, he received but 5 cents a copy. On some other books, only 3 cents. At the General Conference of 1885, the trustees of the Seventh-day Adventist Publishing Association voted to furnish publications to foreign missions at the cost of production. This will help the colporters in many fields. On those works published at our office in Christiana, he received 1/3 discount. But these are mostly small pamphlets or tracts which sell for a few cents each. Of course, it is difficult to support himself and his wife on such profits. But Brother Norland's wife is an industrious worker, doing house cleaning, washing, or any other kind of hard work by which she can help in gaining a livelihood. They live in a very economical manner, occupying one good-sized room on a fourth floor, with the use of a small kitchen with another family. This is a sample of how the work has had to be done in Denmark, Sweden, and Norway. Those who are thus traveling on foot and carrying the books and papers in their leathern sacks are apparently engaged in a humble work, but they should not feel that it is in any sense degrading. It was in a humble manner that Christ labored when he was on the earth. He went on foot from place to place, teaching as he walked. Those who are spreading a knowledge of the truth are scattering precious light that some souls will accept. In the kingdom of God, the fruit of their labors will be seen. A Swedish home. When we came to Stockholm, we were taken to the home of Brother Norlin, who, living near the meeting hall, had secured extra rooms in order to entertain us. Neither he nor his wife could speak English. Brother Madison, who came with us from Copenhagen, acted as interpreter, but our good friends had just moved into a new brick house, which was not thoroughly dry. In some parts of the building, the masons were still at work, and the chill and dampness rendered it unsafe for me to remain there. I thought of taking a room at a hotel for myself and Sister McIntyre, but neither of us could speak the Swedish, and how were we to make our wants known? While we were thus in perplexity, considering the situation, Sister Johannesson, who had lived in America and could speak English quite well, came in to invite us to her home. This invitation we gladly accepted. Her house was pleasantly situated on a hill in the suburbs of the city. A cozy little parlor on the third floor was appropriated to our use. I had become much reduced in strength by the pain I had endured and still continued to suffer from my teeth, and the rest and quiet of this home was very grateful. We were pleasantly surprised to find the table very much the same as at our sanitarium at Battle Creek. The dishes were simple and healthful, and prepared with a skill and nicety that made them inviting and palatable. There is great need of a more general knowledge of the science of healthful cookery. There is a wide field of usefulness open to intelligent, experienced cooks in teaching young ladies how to prepare plain, simple food in a palatable and healthful manner. The rooms were warmed by tall earthenware stoves, reaching nearly to the ceiling. These stoves are made square or round to suit the taste, of various colors, and many are more ornamental than our black iron stoves. The one in the family sitting room was nearly square, and set in one side was a large gilt-framed mirror, not less than 6 feet long, and half as wide. In the morning a wood fire is made, and when the fire is well under way, the doors may be opened, and we have a bright, cheerful blaze throwing out its heat into the room as from a fireplace. When the wood is burned down to a coal, the doors are shut and the drafts closed. Thus the whole structure becomes heated and retains its warmth all day. In most Swedish houses, one of these stoves is to be found in nearly every room except the kitchen. This sister's husband had not taken his stand on the truth, but his interest was with our people. He was a salesman in a large cloak and fur store, and to all appearance it would be impossible for him to keep the fourth commandment and retain his position. The Scandinavian children seem remarkably quiet and well-trained. Wherever we went, they came forward one by one and shook hands with us, the girls making a curtsy and the boys a low bow. Sister Johannesson's four children, from the girl of 8 down to the 3-year-old boy, welcomed us in this manner when we came, and whenever they met us, morning, noon, or evening, the greeting was repeated. At another place where we visited, even the little girl of 2.5 years went through the ceremony with credit. Mr. Johannesson was training his children in singing, and we enjoyed the music of their little voices, blending together in sacred songs. If parents generally would give more time to the education and training of their children, having really a home school for them, their families would be far happier. Children who are gifted with a talent of love of music may receive impressions that will be lifelong by a judicious use of these susceptibilities as the medium for religious instruction. Less time should be spent in the ornamentation of clothing, and far more attention should be given to making the character lovely. It is the inward adorning that will endure. The influences which give direction to these young lives will be far-reaching as eternity. A sad calamity. A short time before we came to Stockholm, a sad calamity occurred, which cast a gloom over the entire city. Christine Nilsson, the famous Swedish singer, visited Stockholm and thousands crowded to the theater to hear her sing. But there were great numbers who could not secure admittance, and for the benefit of these she promised to sing in the open air before her hotel at the close of her last evening's engagement. An immense crowd collected, from 25 to 30,000 people. There was a bridge opposite the hotel, and as the people crowded upon this, at the close of the entertainment, the cry was raised that the railing was giving way, and the people were being crowded into the water. A panic followed. In the rush to get off the bridge, men, women, and children were trampled down. 18 persons were killed, and not less than 70 wounded. We often hear of disasters in theaters and pleasure resorts, where lives are lost, and many are wounded, and perhaps many lifelong sufferers. But these things do not arrest the pleasure seekers. They rush on, thirsting for excitement, and often in the very act they too are hurled into eternity, without a moment's warning. Their probation is ended, and what has been their life record? Can Christ say of these, "Well done, good and faithful servants"? Multitudes are vainly seeking happiness in worldly amusements. They crave something which they have not. They are spending their money for that which is not bread, and their labor for that which satisfieth not. The hungry, thirsting soul will continue to hunger and thirst so long as it partakes of these unsatisfying pleasures. Oh, that they would listen to the voice of Jesus! If any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. Those who drink of the living water will thirst no more for frivolous, exciting amusements. Christ, the wellspring of life, is the fountain of peace and happiness.